morning about what Christ has done. And the failure is that you never can quite get to the place where you've adequately reflected all that Christ has done for us. There's a great deal of ignorance about the extent to which you are loved. May the Lord reveal it. So my son Ezra is 5 years old, and we've noticed that, and I'm sure this is true of all children, but specifically true of boys. Ezra isn't naturally inclined towards living for others, just put it that way. And loving others, he doesn't wake up and think, I just want to love people today. He's inclined towards saying, what would I like to eat? What would I like to do? What do I want? That is what we will do, okay? He's inclined towards focusing on himself. And aren't we all? We get older and we find easier ways of hiding our selfishness, but the selfishness remains. It's what he has inherited from me. And I've been thinking about how to encourage him to see and love other people. At the end of the day, we're all very focused on ourselves, and it is a divine opportunity when we think, I'm gonna love someone else. I'm gonna spend of myself. And I really would like these characteristics to be present in him and myself as well. And since they wouldn't naturally arise, I've been thinking about how to help them arise. And so I've been saying, now Ezra, we Prismans are servants. That's what we do. We serve, okay? In other words, you know, our identity, what we've chosen is to be servers of others, to sacrifice for others. So son, let's be what we're made to be and let's stop being selfish, okay? Let's be servants. Now the characteristic of service that really defines, as we look at the Bible, it defines the patriarchs in the Bible, and it was also meant to define Israel, what Israel was supposed to be. Israel is supposed to be the servant of the Lord. In fact, the word to serve is really very closely attached to the word to worship. Israel was to worship God by specifically doing whatever it was that God saw fit to do. And I think about Abraham, actually. God appears to Abraham, and he says, Abraham, Abraham. And Abraham's response is, here I am. And he twice says, here I am. He responds this way, here I am. In Hebrew, for you Hebrew nuts, it's hineni, hineni, which means behold, look, I. It's really like saying, I'm available for whatever. I'm ready to serve you however you like. Go ahead, ask me to do anything. Here I am, I will. Jacob responds twice this way, not just Abraham. Jacob, to the Lord, here I am. Some nearly 400 years later, Moses will say, here I am. Abraham, or Moses, here I am. I'm ready to do what you like. Sadly, after God said what he wanted to do, Moses then said, maybe not. Samuel, sit and wait for the Lord, and when he speaks, say, here I am. David, Psalms 40, here I am. Of course, Isaiah 6, there's the vision of God's glory, and Isaiah is there, and he's terrified and out of his mind, and he's a sinner, and God takes care of his sin, and then he says, who will go for me? And what does Isaiah say? Here I am. Send me. But they all failed. They all failed. They are all a whole bunch of sinful lot. None of them could really serve the Lord the way that the Lord wanted to be served. Now, let's look at Jesus. Hebrews 10:5. This is what it says, Jesus speaking. Sacrifice and offerings you did not desire, but a body you prepared for me with burnt offerings and sin offerings you were not pleased. Then I said, here I am. It is written about me in the scroll. I have come to do your will, my God. There's our word, here I am. Jesus the Son says to the Father, I am ready to do your will. What is God's will? Well, there's this sacrificial system that doesn't really work. People are slaughtering all these animals for sins. The animal dies. It's a picture of them being absolved through the death of an innocent creature, but that's just a picture. It doesn't really absolve sins at all. But Jesus has been given a body. The perfect Son was given a body. And God is saying, thanks for being willing to serve. I know how you can serve. Lay down your life. Give up your life. Be the lamb to slaughter for these people. Philippians chapter 2, many famous words here. Jesus, in his very nature being God, he doesn't consider equality with God something to be grasped, but rather he empties himself and he becomes a servant. He becomes the servant. I will do whatever you take, God. And then he humbles himself to death, meaning it wasn't his idea to go and do that. It was what he was asked to do, and he will serve, and he will go, and he will do it. Here I am, whatever you wish for me to do. What does he wish? What does God wish? He wishes to save his people. He wishes to save you. And this is why he sends Jesus. And Jesus' body is his gift. He lays it down as a sacrifice in service. You know, as we read about Jesus' passage, we must understand he has chosen to serve God and us by giving everything. That's really kind of the punchline of our talk this morning. Jesus has served you. This is not about some man dying somewhere in a terrible way. You know, there were lots of people that were crucified. If you didn't know, thousands were crucified on that hill that Jesus died on. But this is different. This is for you. This is for me. Like many people, my vision is getting slightly worse. I used to have perfect vision, and I actually brag about this quite a bit. I don't need glasses. And then I went to seminary, and I read lots and lots and lots, and suddenly I needed glasses. And so I had to wear glasses because I was reading so much. And then when I got out of seminary, I stopped reading lots, and I was able to take the glasses away again. And I've been kind of hoping that it won't get worse again, but now it has, actually. And so when I'm driving now, the words off in the distance kind of become double, like going to blur up a little bit. And I need to wear glasses when I go driving. And I'm hoping that I don't have to wear glasses just all the time. But you know, I've not spent time in prayer saying, God, why don't you use my incoming more blindness for your glory? I don't know anybody who goes and prays to God, and what they pray is, Lord, if it would be good for me to die or to be in a worse situation physically, go ahead and do that. We all pray, Lord, lift me up from my suffering. Lift me up from what I'm going through. Don't take away my life in the middle of my years. But Jesus says, I have been given a body. I will serve. Here I am. Could you imagine how he felt when he read Psalm 40? Because Psalm 40 is a messianic psalm, you know, it's talking about him. And he's the Messiah, you know, he's like, oh, dear goodness, what is on tap for my life? It's going to be cut short. What an incredible moment. But it wasn't just a moment, you see. Jesus is able at any point during his earthly life, but especially those last days of his life, to turn around from doing the Father's will. As he's being led to death, the pain is too great, he can just say, I don't want to do this anymore. These people can die for their own sins for all I care. You notice he actually said in Gethsemane, his words, we read them, I don't want to do this. Can we come up with another plan? And the Father says, no. And so this then becomes this incredibly grueling test, a test that you and I and every other person on earth is going to fail. To go all the way to the cross and to die, but not only to die in a physically agonizing way, to die in a place of separation and judgment from the Father, from whom eternity has never seen them separate. On earth, they're separate. Something far worse than the hell that you and I deserve is happening to the Son. When I was young, in secondary school, I used to like running up the stairs. I just naturally would run up the stairs and kind of run here and run there. And people are like, you're going to be a great runner, you know? And it's like, yeah, I'm going to be a great runner. And so my parents said, why don't you go into athletics, you know? And I did, and I thought, listen, I run up the stairs and I run here and there. I must be a great runner. I must be great. And they said, oh, you're a long-distance runner, just so you know. You're a long-distance runner. And I said, oh, surely the first run I'm going to do is going to be great. I'm going to do a mile run, and it's going to be, I'm sure it's going to be less than 6 minutes, you know. because I'm great. And then I got out there, you know, and for that first run, and I started out pretty fast. I started out way too fast, actually. I remember they said the time, and I thought, that can't be right for a first lap around. It's four laps. And then it was like lead descended into my legs. And I was like unable to like continue. I was just dying. And one by one, all of these people that I was in front of, they were passing me. And the last one said, as he was passing, he was like, hey, guy. And I was like, And he's like, don't worry. You're going to make it to the end. Keep moving. You're going to make it to the end. And it was exhausting. And I had to, all of the energy in me, I had to marshal just to make it to the end. And it was 10 minutes, by the way. 10 minutes was my first mile run. Jesus, we think we could do what he did. We think we're up for this race. No one here is up for this race. No one knows the exhaustion that he went through. No one knows what he did, and it is for you. The race to end all races. The race in which if Jesus just turns around and says, you know, I've had enough, we all go to hell. But he didn't. He is the suffering servant. That's what we remember today. We remember the King in his glory. He bled, he died, and it was for you. Do you receive it? Let's pray. Oh God, what a poor introduction to all that you did through Jesus on the cross. I hope that I've gotten even just a taste of something, of the glory of the Son, the agony of Calvary that is for us. Let Jesus' love sink deep into our hearts. I pray that we would not resist it. That we would say, come. Come and show me your love. Come and show me the suffering of the King for me. In your name, amen.